The following presentation is part of the Beyond the Blast Doors Network.
This is Pete Fletzer, and welcome to Around the Galaxy, the Star Wars fan talk show. This week, we are joined by Stephen Ford, actor, producer, and superfan. Join us as we talk about his YouTube channel, Ascender, his Star Wars story, and the voice of Anakin Skywalker. So strap yourselves in, relax, and enjoy this journey around the galaxy. Well, welcome to episode number 98 of Around the Galaxy, the Star Wars fan talk show. I am your host, Pete Fletzer, and we are a part of the Beyond the Blast Doors Network. If this is your first visit with Around the Galaxy, well, thank you so much for checking us out. You are in for a treat, and if you're a return visitor, well, you know the drill. Week to week, we have this great opportunity to bring you a new perspective on Star Wars, whether it's from an author or a creator or an actor or a super fan. And this week is no different. I'm very excited to bring you an interview with Mr. Stephen Ford. Just I mentioned at the top that we are a part of the Beyond the Blast Doors Network, which means that we share a very special space on the internet with a whole bunch of great content creators, people like Holochronicles on Mondays with all your favorite conversations about Star Wars toys and collectibles. On Tuesdays, well, you have the show. On Wednesday nights, you get Beyond the Blast Doors Live with David Amelotti, Arzu Amin, and Scotty Jaro. And they're looking at all the latest happenings in Star Wars and bringing you news and opinion and conversations. Thursdays, the Bombad cast hits, and I wish I could tell you what you're going to get. I have no idea, and I bet they don't either. But they're going to be a lot of fun on Thursdays. And of course, on Fridays, you get me and Josh Most. And once again, this week, we're going to be joined by special guest host Raven on our Friday night live call-in show called Force Connect. So tonight is no different than other Tuesday night shows where we bring you a live interview. And this week, as I said, we're bringing you Stephen Ford. Stephen is a Star Wars fan. He's a video game fan. He's an actor who you may have seen on Teen Wolf, or he was also on Kamen Rider. He had a recurring role on Private Practice. He did a phenomenal parody of the film 1917 called 2020, which you must check out. But tonight, he's here as a Star Wars fan.
Hey!
So
look at that tee up. That was incredible.
It was a perfect tee up.
That was perfect.
But hey, how are you? You're not related to Harrison Ford, are you?
I'm actually his love child. I don't know. I took the name though. He wasn't chill with it, but I did it anyway.
That's the problem with love children. You don't know what they're gonna do.
It's funny you mentioned this though. I remember. So my original name is Lunsford, but when I was a kid getting into the acting industry, I think I was like 8 years old. And I was like, wait, I don't want, that's an annoying name. I don't want to do Lunsford. I want to do Ford, like Harrison Ford. And my agent was like, you can't do that. And I'm like, I will. And I didn't for a long time. And then finally I did. And I was like, yeah, well, I'll keep it. It's funny. So that you mentioned that. Yeah.
I was going to take the name Ford, but it didn't match me at all. But and Ray already took Skywalker, so I couldn't go with that.
It's a shame. It's a shame.
Yeah. Already done. So
we Steven, all still cry about it.
Some will and some won't, right? So let's start before we get too into it. Tell us a little bit about Ascender and what you have going on there, because that is a really fun and cool place happening on YouTube right now.
Yeah, it's funny because I did some work for this company called Machinima, which I'm not sure if you know what that is. They were around for a while. They did basically video game stuff. They did like video game news. They did cool like live action things. And I was lucky enough to be involved with them for their last like 2 or 3 years before WB bought them out. And they brought me in basically being like, hey, you've been on shows. You know how to make stuff, right? And I'm like, yeah, I do. I know how to make stuff. And they were like, great, cool, go make stuff. So then basically underneath that company, I was like, all right, guys, we got to do like cinematic, action-packed video game content, because not a lot of people were really doing that outside of like Corridor back at the time. And I was like, we should do that too. And they were like, great, cool, go make it or whatever. And then right around that time is right when the company shut down. And so they were like, yeah, just take it. It's yours anyway. And I'm like, great, cool. So that was kind of our whole motto, was doing like combining my love for cinema and my love for video games and just like, okay, let's do something really cool with that. So we actually started last year. Year before last, I think. We started the channel. The channel went downhill. Nobody watched our stuff. We got we were partnered. And then YouTube was like, hey, you're not partnered anymore. Right around the time that we were about to start uploading our Call of Duty series. And then I was like, okay, what do we do now? So basically we sat on it for 6 months while I was trying to figure out, you know, what kind of content we should do for 2020. And then we decided to do the 1917 parody, which kind of just, you know, launched us into having now more subscribers than we did before. And we don't get a lot of views and it's fine, but that's not the goal. The goal is just to make some cool stuff that eventually people will enjoy. And yeah, we our 1917 parody has like 2.4 million views, which on a brand new channel, I'm very proud of.
You should be. And it's great. Yeah. It's hilarious. And it's it's I didn't know what to expect. And actually, I started following you, I guess, I don't know, 5-6 months ago. And I saw it come up and I was like, I got to go check this out. And it's great. And it's thank really you. A lot of fun. And it's perfect for the times. And let's just hope you don't need to make a 2021. I'm not going through this again.
Everyone keeps saying that. They're like, all right, where's the sequel? And I'm like, no, we don't want a sequel. That's bad. Yeah, that little short film, it's funny because it was basically just me, my girlfriend, producing partner, and some amazing actors that actually just showed up in the middle of the 2020, all that. It was just we basically ran around with a gimbal for 3 months, filming and refilming and filming again. And then finally we put it all together. And yeah, people at Universal saw it. I get to finally say this because he said to throw his name out. Sam Mendes saw it.
All right.
So awesome. Wow. And that's he enjoyed great. It. Which is cool. Just a childhood hero of mine watching the thing that I did. Sure. No big deal.
No.
So yeah, it's fun. And it might lead to some cool things that we're working on right now. Maybe. We don't know. We don't know.
But we'll be watching.
Cross those fingers. Yeah.
That's great. That's really cool. So tell me a little bit about your Star Wars history. When did you get into Star Wars? And the reason this is why you're on the show, because I started following you and you have, like, I don't know, a couple times a week, a Star Wars. Sometimes it's a hot take. Sometimes it's just an opinion. Sometimes it's just a Star Wars post. But either way, I knew you were a Star Wars fan. And I said, let's see what you're at. But how did you get into Star Wars? We talked a little bit about it just before we got on, but tell me a little bit about it.
It's funny because I usually do. Since I talk about it so often, I actually get people tweeting at me or DMing me being like, stop talking about Star Wars. And I'm like, I can't. I cannot stop talking about it. And it's funny because I'm always like, maybe I shouldn't talk about it because I want to eventually do a Star Wars thing, like in some way. I don't care if I'm like an X-Wing pilot that got blown up in like 2 seconds. I want to be involved in somehow. And I'm like, if I say too many things, maybe I won't be involved, but you know what? I don't care. I will be involved and I will say things. So yeah, that's the goal.
It shows your passion. Yeah,
it does. It does. There it is. But no, when I was, maybe 7 or 6 or so when the special edition movies came out in theaters and I saw Empire Strikes Back. I didn't see A New Hope before it. I saw Empire Strikes Back and we went to like, there's this place called Disney Celebration, which is in Florida. And it's this little town that's literally a Disney town. Like they've got like townhouses and like a duplex theater. It's adorable. And so we went there, we saw it and I was just, my mind was blown. And then after that, but this was during the dark times of being a Star Wars fan. And I even knew this at my young age. How hard was it to find just Star Wars action figures?
Wait, yeah. So when the special editions came out, that was 97. How old were you, if you don't mind me?
I was like 7. I think I was like 7 at that time. Yeah. Right. So, I mean, they had like the special edition toys that came out. I do know that. And I had a lot of those, but like a lot of the, you had to go to like the comic book stores. They weren't readily available everywhere, especially like the older, more obscure stuff that came out of like the extended universe.
Right.
Yeah. Those were the ones that I wanted. So it was like one of those things that like I would, you know, I would mow yards just to pay for a new Star Wars video game or a new like the PS1 games that they had coming out, like the fighting games, Pod Racer. Yeah, man, it was a dark time. Awesome. It was a dark time for Star Wars fans because there wasn't a lot of it wasn't like you could just go down to a store and get a lightsaber just because you wanted to.
Right.
Those were like the crappy like see through flashlight ones.
Flashlight with this plastic tube on it. Yeah.
Not great. Not great. And they did not last. And I would know that as a child. I'd try to beat everything with it. So yeah, that's kind of what started me down the road. And after that, you know, it was funny because I was obsessed with the prequels. I really was, because I was the demographic, man. I was nine years old when that came out, when Phantom Menace. And it was only around the time I came out to LA. I was doing auditions, and I did this one audition where I was wearing a Star Wars shirt or something, because we talked about Phantom Menace. And this director, who's like probably in his 20s or whatever, and one of those dudes that like he went to film school, so he's like, I know about film. And he's one of those guys, and I'm like a 9-year-old kid, and he's like, oh my gosh, did you see Phantom Menace? I'm like, yes, I did. And I'm about to talk about how great this movie is. And he goes, it sucked, didn't it? And I'm like, yeah, it was awful. And I just, at that point, I'm like, are the prequels not good?
It's funny because this is one of the things that when I talked to my buddy Scotty and Jerry, who are on the network with us, they have that Bombad show, which you heard me introduce before, which if you get a chance, check them out, because they are
wackadoo
and so much fun. But they are prequel kids, and it's funny because they, like you, didn't know that Jar Jar was, you know, like
no,
because I'm in that obviously older demographic. I'm feeling looking like you're talking to your dad. This is an interview from your dad and you just hanging out and talking. No, but
generations of Star Wars people. I love it.
Exactly. But so when I walked out, I've told this story 100 times, but I was at the New York City premiere of Phantom Menace, and even as the celebrities walked out, I wasn't one of the celebrities, but they were like, that was good. I think
had moments,
right? There were spaceships and Jedi, which was cool, but people like you,
I love the Jedi, right? I will say this from the inception. This is not even me retconning my memory. I never liked Jar Jar Binks, but it's funny because I used to do an impression of him all the time to my mother, and she hated it. It was like the worst, most grating thing to her. But it's funny because even though I was like such a prequel kid when it came to like the first one, like Phantom Menace was like the thing for me, because I was like, okay, Anakin's like the same age as me or whatever. Right. And I'm him. I'm that kid. And I don't really care about Anakin, like little Annie. I care more about Obi-Wan Kenobi, which is why I dressed up as Obi-Wan Kenobi for like 2 years in a row for Halloween. I had like the little braid that came down that was like very controversial at the time. I remember everyone was like, what's this rat tail out of his thing? And then I'm like, but it's cool because it's, and it was like that thing that looped over your ear, whatever. But by the time Attack of the Clones came out, I was like, this is bad. And I was so enamored by the original trilogy that even at a young age, I was like, no, this is not as good. I did not like that as much.
How did Star Wars strike you? And did you become a fan from seeing Empire first? I have to say, I've spoken to, you know, this is my 98th episode, and I don't know if I've spoken to anybody who's started with Empire Strikes Back.
Right in the middle. It was a mistake too, because like I know for a fact, my mom and her like boyfriend at the time, he was like, "Well, no, we gotta take him to see Star Wars," and she's like, "I don't think he's seen A New Hope," because like I don't remember how did they, did all the special editions drop at the same time, or were they staggered in months? I can't remember.
Yeah, so here's my actually total nerddom, that they came out one, and then a couple months, I think it was about a month later, I think it was every month or every other month they came out, but there were some places where I actually went. I was 27, I guess. And my dad, who's a huge Star Wars fan, and I talk about him all the time, he and I and my mother actually went to all three movies in one day at one of the theaters.
That's so cool. Whatever you can say about the special editions for, you know, obstructing the screen with like a dumb CGI monster, it's still awesome. That's amazing.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it was funny because like she's like, I don't think he's seen A New Hope. And she called up my grandparents. My grandparents were like, oh, no, he's seen it. He's seen A New Hope. No, I hadn't. But I'm like in the middle of the story. I'm like, why is there like a snow monster? And like, what's going on? And I had no clue. But even having no idea anything about the Star Wars, like everything that was literally the first setup for everything.
Yeah.
You know, I was so enamored by it that even, but it's funny, Because when I went back, and I know that like we had the VHS of the original one, it wasn't even called A New Hope. It was just called Star Wars. I think we had that VHS still. And I had a debate with like so many people. I'm like, it's always been called A New Hope. And they're like, no, dude, it's been called Star Wars and then A New Hope or whatever. Yeah. So I watched that and I was like, this is not as good as Empire. Like, I don't, like, you could say that, like, you know, the original Star Wars is what it is. It's one of the greatest things. Pieces of cinema ever, because it like had the it's the true hero's journey or whatever. And now as a screenwriter and director, I'm like, oh, I can understand why that was so influential and so huge. It's the Lord of the Rings thing. It's so, I get it. But that's the reason why I also like the Two Towers more. It's I like that middle dip in the journey where everything is going wrong and you get to know your characters more. And for me to realize that at like 7 or 8 years old was so awesome.
Yeah.
But not know why I knew that.
Right. You knew something was like this, what's going on. But yeah.
So yeah, that's kind of where it started. And then after that, you know, I was no longer a total asshole in school because I spent all my time playing video games, and it started me down the path of nerdom. Like that's what it is. It was Star Wars that like, kept me from being like a total jerk to classmates and spending time, like, you know, it's great. I love Star Wars. Gave me a totally different childhood that you know, I didn't hardly have at that point. I didn't really connect with anything like that, and it totally changed me.
I think this was so interesting and exciting and almost strange that Star Wars is now 44 years old, and it had that effect on me, had that effect on you. And I have an 8-year-old and an 11-year-old, and my 8-year-old can go talk to all his buddies about Clone Wars and Star Wars. But there's something about Star Wars, and maybe as somebody who's a writer and filmmaker and actor, like, what is it? People say it's the hero's journey and all that, and that sort of base stuff. And I get that. And I kind of buy that, but there's something more going on with Star Wars that allows you to when you're in the 90s and early 2000s to have a similar, frankly, it's similar experience to what I had and what my kids are having now. What do you think it is about Star Wars that makes that connection?
So I can't remember who said it. I think it was maybe one of the producers of
Rick McCollum.
Yeah. I think he's the one who said that like Star Wars is not sci-fi. It's not fantasy. It's fantasy and sci-fi. And like that is what I think has made it so unique. Beyond, you know, us connecting with the characters or anything like that, which is, you know, you kind of do that with any movie or anything. Sure. It's that I've been thinking about this for years. I'm like, what is going to be like the next Star Wars? And it's like impossible to make that. I mean, you could say the MCU is like the next Star Wars. You could say that. You could say DC or anything like that. But it's not even, because it's still based in our reality in a way. It's still based off of what but Star Wars is just other. It's fantasy, it's Lord of the Rings, and to that sci-fi element that is what makes it so special, I think. And I think because no one can quite put their finger on it, it's funny that you mentioned this, because there's this little thing that I like to call Star Wars magic, which is not something that a lot of films can have. Like a great example is you know, like Disney movies. Sometimes Disney movies have magic and sometimes they really don't. Like sometimes you're like, oh, this is a really awesome movie, like Pirates of the Caribbean, the first one. You're like, oh my god, it has that magical feeling to it. It's just like almost in the air of like when you're watching it. It's everything from the cinematography, the performances, the characters, to the music specifically. And then you get to something like Mulan, which is like completely devoid of like character or life or anything. And it just feels like it's made to kind of make money. And it's you got Disney that sometimes they can do that magic. And Disney was known for that magic, especially in the 90s with the animated films. Like it had that magic. Star Wars specifically has that magic. And it's funny because I'll jump onto the now sequel train, because I got a lot of opinions about the sequels. But what I will say is that first, The Force Awakens, as much as it doesn't really hold up to multiple viewings like the original Star Wars trilogy or even sometimes the prequels, it kind of does fall onto itself. You're like, why? What? The mystery boxes are taking me out of this. Yeah. You have all of that, sure. But the thing that J.J. Abrams as a director, and I would not say as a writer, mm-hmm. but as a director, is he has that magic in yep. his movies. Like, yep. have you seen Super 8 by any chance?
Yep. Super 8, yeah. Star Trek, those, yep.
Those movies, Star Trek, Super 8, great examples of that magic, that same kind of like, you're getting sucked into this universe and you can't really explain why. I mean, there's a reason why Mission Impossible 3, even though you cannot specific, what's the rabbit's foot? No one knows. Even though you're that, you're like, it still has that little like magic. And I think there are very few, you know, Spielberg has that, Lucas has that, but not as a director. I don't think, I think as a, just a storyteller, somebody that comes up 100%. With these fantastic. Yep. And so you combine all these elements, and I think that's why it Star Wars has that Star Wars magic that I think can fade away, as we've seen in some of the Disney properties. Mm-hmm. But I think something like The Force Awakens actually did capture that quite well. Yep. And I think that's why I think that we just connect with that magic. It's ether. I don't know.
Yeah, no, but it's an interesting point, because I go so far lately as to say that Star Wars is its own genre, right? I mean,
it really is. Yeah,
you get video games, TV shows, animation, movies, books, and comics that are Star Wars. They're not sci-fi comics. They're not fantasy comics. They're Star Wars comics, and it's grown, and it's interesting because to me, it's grown beyond Lord of the Rings, right? Lord of the Rings, I would say maybe, and you can agree or disagree, whoever wants to, whatever, but that used to be the thing, right? Because it had lore, it had people digging into it. And I don't know what came between that, where there was that, maybe Star Trek to a degree, but it's still, Star Trek was a little too shiny, a little too, no offense to Star Trek fans, a little more shallow. It was more, it's missing the mysticism, which Star Wars has.
Yes. That's a great word to use. It truly, it's funny, because I was a big Star Trek fan because my mom was a Star Trek fan. But I actually never really got into the Next Generation. And I think that's I didn't connect with the original series. I liked the movies. They were okay. But like, again, as a kid, I'm like growing up with these. And of course, I really enjoyed the one J.J. Abrams movie. It was fantastic. And so we finally decided during the quarantine, I'm like, all right, I need to watch the Next Generation. I've never seen it all the way through. I need to see it. And that is like the penultimate Star Wars, in my opinion, or Star Trek, in my opinion. Not the first season, but after that, you're like, okay, they're starting to understand the characters and the mysticism kind of that's surrounding it. But even so, it still doesn't get to the same kind of genre blending magic as Star Wars. And I think that's why when we see something like Discovery or even the new movies, it doesn't hold up to what Star Wars is. Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. It's really interesting. I don't know. It's just great. I don't know.
It's great. The end. Thank you.
It's good.
Yeah. Well, thank you for joining me, Stephen. This has been a lot of fun. but it's interesting because I think, you have so much different content to choose from, and even, you know, the Disney television properties and
right.
Now of the Disney television properties, or even the pre-Disney, are you I know I want to ask you a little bit about a specific Clone Wars thing, but did you watch Clone Wars and did you watch Rebels or any of those shows?
So I didn't, I didn't watch the Clone Wars series, mostly because I was bitter.
Let's take a break from our current conversation. Let's go into the bitterness about Clone Wars that you have. Cause
I mean, okay. So like, you know, being the Star Wars fan that I grew up as,
right.
and I've gotten maybe two, no, I've gotten three opportunities to maybe be in a Star Wars thing. Mm-hmm. And they were all at completely different periods of my life. So, and specifically periods of my career. Mm-hmm. So when it came to the Clone Wars thing, I think I was like 17 or 18 when the first, I can't remember. I was a teenager and I remember getting the audition for Anakin and I was like, this is it. This is the moment. I finally got this. I can totally do. I watched the prequels so many times to like mimic Hayden Christensen's very wooden voice. And I'm just like, so I kept like trying. I got very close. But it was one of those things that they picked a guy that was working a lot more than I was at the time. And I was basically like, I would say it was maybe down between me and four or five other guys. Mm-hmm. And it just didn't happen. And I was just like, I'm never watching that show in my life. I hate this show. This show is stupid. And it's funny because I've heard from so many people that like it's so great. And I'm just like, all right, fine. I guess I'm over it. I auditioned. I also auditioned for Force Awakens. And this was back before they kind of knew where they were going to go with the story. I can't remember the name of the original writer for The Force Awakens. But it was a dude that had done a lot of things. And he basically took 7 months to like write the script. And then when they came to him and they were like, yo, we got to get this thing out summer 2015. Otherwise, we just spent a lot of money on this property. We need to make it back, please. And Bob Iger's like, seriously, 2015. And so the writer's like, yo, I can't create a whole trilogy and plan this whole thing out in just 7 months. I need more time. I need like 8 more months. And that's when like Kathleen Kennedy and JJ were like, okay, bye. And they basically took the kernels of it and they were like, let's do this, but like make A New Hope again. And I personally thought that that was a brilliant move because we had seen the reaction from original fans to the prequels and how different they were. And I was just like, okay, bringing it back to the original formula is a really smart idea to be like, hey, trust us. We know what we're doing.
Right.
Little did we know, but I auditioned.
We were like, it worked for George. It'll work for us. We can do this.
Hey, George, we're going to completely ignore everything that you just gave us to maybe do. No. Bye.
No, we got this. We got JJ. Yeah. We're good.
So I auditioned when I think it was during the process of that original writer, when I think it was supposed to focus on Han Solo's kids, but they were good. Or it was like, I think I was auditioning for either Harrison Ford's kids or Mark Hamill's kids. I can't remember. It was one of those. It was kind of just like, we don't know. Maybe we'll put you. I don't know. And then when it came to Solo, that was like right around the time of like, so the whole Solo thing, they actually like were approaching casting like 4 years maybe before that whole film happened, before they even filmed it. They were like, maybe we're going to do a Solo movie. We don't know. And so I auditioned for something. I didn't realize kind of what it was that I was auditioning for at the time. And I it didn't happen, but that's fine. Cause like, I love Alden. He did a freaking great
did you
job.
Did you audition as Ford or Lunsford? That might have been.
Those they were like, it's not Ford at this point. So, you know,
sorry, kid. Next
point. Yeah. So, like, I've auditioned for Star Wars before, and, you know, hopefully I'll get the chance to die in an X-Wing or some point. That'd be really cool for me. But yeah, we'll see. But yeah, that's it. I need to get on the Clone Wars.
You do need to watch them. And I understand.
I get it.
I remember when I was a kid, I won't say what band it was because it's embarrassing and it will date me, but I had tickets, but this girl that I knew was going to take me to go see this band. She had an extra ticket and then she canceled. And from that day forward, I was like, screw that band. I hate that.
The worst band ever now.
Right. Yeah. Why would I ever want to go see them? They. Yeah. So I get it.
That was me. Yeah.
You with Clone Wars. So, but, and you didn't watch Rebels or any of that. You were like,
no, my animation buddy, or? My buddy Ezra, my buddy's actually, I think he's on Rebels. I can't remember. Taylor Gray.
I hope he's, tell him to watch this and watch what just happened here. You should know this.
I don't know. I also haven't seen him in like 4 years because, you know, LA, right. But LA's one of those places where you're like, oh, well, we'll catch up. We'll hang out. You want to come? Let's go film something. And then that doesn't happen for 3 years. And then you're like, oh, right. I forgot. That's LA. Yeah. Right. So yeah. Forgive me. But eventually I will. One day.
But it's interesting because there are so many different. So from that perspective, then, so did you watch Mandalorian? I'm guessing. Because world did, right?
The Mandalorian is the greatest thing to happen to Star Wars since like Empire Strikes Back. Yeah. It just is. Yeah. It's just so good. Like, I mean, here's the thing. I have a lot of opinions about the Mandalorian. Because when I first watched The Mandalorian, like whenever I'm like the first time watching each episode, I'm like, this sucks. I don't, I'm like, I don't like any of what's happening. I don't like, I don't like where they're taking the story. I don't like this. I don't like that. I come up with like all these things of what I don't like because I'm just hypercritical of it. And then I will rewatch the season and be like, oh my, it's so good. Yeah. And like, that's exactly what I did with like Luke coming out. Spoilers. But that's what I did with like Luke coming out. And I was just like, I would have done it differently, but I'm like, I know that's just like, because it's my profession that I'm probably thinking that. But it's just like, it's funny. Cause like that's like, I've now seen the first season of The Mandalorian, like, I don't know, 3 or 4 times each. Mm-hmm. And cause it's just like, it's exactly what I wanted. It's a space Western that has some mysticism and some mystery. And I just, I love Jon Favreau. I now love Dave Filoni. I didn't like, okay, the first season Dave Filoni did, I think the first episode.
Mm-hmm.
The first episode was pretty weak, in my opinion, because you're just like, oh, where's this going? Who's this blue dude that's right. like the comic relief? Where what's going to happen? There were things I did not like about it when I first saw that first episode. Right. But then seeing the episode that he did for season 2 with Ahsoka, I'm like, oh my, so good. And you like, it's funny because like I feel like he needed that like little rough bump to be like, okay, how do I now work from animation to live action? And by doing that episode with Ahsoka, he was like, he did the frames literally felt like moments from the Clone Wars. So even though I haven't seen the Clone Wars, I know that that's those with the moon, I'm like, that's animation 100%. And so seeing him be able to like kind of stretch his legs with that. Season 2 wasn't as good, in my opinion, as season 1, but it had better moments. It's odd, but like all in all, it's still great.
It's interesting you say that about Filoni's episode in the second season, because I agree. There were, I mean, and I was late to the Clone Wars game, but I did get into it. And there were definitely shots. And you know, I mean, you have that anime connection as well. Yeah. And so you could definitely see that that episode was an anime
show
brought to life. I mean, everything incredible. He did with it was perfect.
Yeah.
And I'm excited that they are giving him those second and third shots. Because I agree. The first one, I while it had the phenomenal reveal at the end that changed Star Wars, modern Star Wars, right? The episode, there were moments that were a little bit flat. And he also had the Toro Calican episode, which is very hard to watch. But you know, it's funny. You talked about Star Trek. That blue guy at the beginning, I thought he looked like a Star Trek alien. That was my first concern. Was oh no, we're getting like Star Trek instead of Star Wars. And of course,
he's like barely in it. I'm like, ooh, okay, we're good. it's funny because I think the big thing with jumping from animation to live action, just from a directing point of view, is it's hard to get the tone right. So like. I think Dave Filoni had a little bit of a hard time with that first episode with tone and then was able to kind of figure it out for his second or third episode or whatever. Yep. I think he was able to, it's really difficult to jump back and forth between that like comedy and that seriousness kind of thing that like, you know, like a Marvel movie does very well.
Yeah.
But tonality is one of the biggest hurdles as a director, especially like, I know that the way that they do The Mandalorian is like, very quick. They probably don't do 20 takes. Right. So it's not like they have like a lot of options and it's just like kind of a machine at that point. So yeah, it's the tonality. I'm happy to see that he's like, he's kind of figured out. Cause that's something like Jon Favreau is great at. He's great at tone. Like no matter what, like even though there's some shots that I'm like, it's not that, not that pretty, Jon. Tonally, it's like, okay, you get it. You understand. Right. So I'm happy to see that he's doing quite a bit better in the live action realm, like a Brad Bird. That makes me very happy. Yeah.
Yeah. No, and it's and there's so much Star Wars coming. And recently, in the transition to the video game side of the world, we got this announcement about Lucasfilm Games, which, first of all, I don't know why they didn't just go back to LucasArts, because bring that back. I want the dude with the lightsaber and the.
Get it. It doesn't make any sense. Like they're just like, okay, guys, we're not doing LucasArts anymore. Bye. 1313 probably going to be the best Star Wars game ever. Peace. They're like, all right, now EA, and then they're like, all right, cool, Lucasfilm Games.
Is it films or games? Is it?
Okay, all right, fine. Whatever. Lucasfilm Games. That doesn't make sense, but all right, cool.
whatever.
So, as a, you know, you're obviously a big gamer, you're Halo guy, you're a Call of Duty guy. What do you want to see as sort of like that perfect Star Wars game? Because I think we've all been hoping for the perfect Star Wars game. And it's funny because it just feels like it should happen, right? How hard could it be to make a Star Wars game, right?
No, it's hard. It's funny you say this because, like, knowing, so the whole, like, okay, my favorite video game series probably of all time is the Uncharted series. Amy Hennig is probably one of my greatest idols as a storyteller because it got me into Uncharted. I mean, it's why I wear the ring from Uncharted. Mm. It's just like a thing. I love that series, and it's perfect in so many ways. And Amy Hennig kind of got, we don't know the exact behind the scenes details of like Uncharted 4, but she basically worked on Uncharted 4 and they apparently did like half the game or most of the game. And then Neil Druckmann, who had just come off the awesomeness of the first Last of Us, he came in and was like, all right, Amy, bye. And Amy was, I guess, let go or fired or she left. I don't know. But she went on to work for EA. And I can't remember what studio exactly. But she went on to work for EA to create a open world Star Wars game that was like about a ragtag group of like a heist type thing or whatever. And it was supposed to be basically an open world Uncharted, but Star Wars. And I'm like, that is exactly what we need. We need that, like, kind of GTA, even though I'm not the biggest GTA fan, we need Witcher 3, that GTA, that kind of like open world feel, but like have like the mechanics of like an Uncharted game that's like really good just as a third person.
Sure.
Yep. So Amy Hennig worked on Ragtag for, I don't know, 1 or 2 years. They even like, they did this whole like preview of what EA was gonna do with it, and they had like this like little moment. It's this funny little story where every single EA game is supposed to use the Frostbite engine, which is the same engine that they use to make Battlefield and Battlefront and basically all their games. That's what EA wants to do. They're like, we've got this great engine, it's gorgeous, use it for everything. And then Amy Hennig and everybody else, they're like, we can't do third person and cool shit with it. We can't do that.
Right.
Like, no, make it work. And so basically Amy Hennig spent like 9 months just trying to work with the team just to make a character touch a wall. Like that's it was so. So her coming from like the Naughty Dog engine to that, the Frostbite engine that just could not do the kind of like Last of Us 2 kind of dynamic movement. I know caused a lot of issues, and basically because of the way that EA works, as much as I love them and I'm an EA ambassador myself, so technically I'm not allowed to say anything, but I also don't care because I love EA games sometimes, but like they make some weird decisions. Yeah. So like when it comes to like the whole Amy Hennig thing, her doing Ragtag, they canceled that game. And I'm like, why would you do that? That's exactly what we all want. Yep. And I think, so if you basically, in my opinion, and she's now no longer doing that game. She's doing stuff for Skydance Media, which is great. And I know that Ubisoft has been announced to do an open world Star Wars game. And so what I'm hoping is that we kind of get like that Red Dead Redemption 2 quality, but with like a GTA Online kind of component added to it. Because my big thing, did you play Jedi Fallen Order by any chance?
I did, and I'm playing it a second time right now.
Okay, exactly. Jedi Fallen Order is not a perfect game, in my opinion. It is. Mm-hmm. It's got issues. It's a little too linear, but it's really, really, really good, especially when you compare it to a lot of the other Star Wars games. And I know everybody liked Battlefront 2. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed it too. I enjoyed it, but it's not the Star Wars experience for me. Like I think it was lacking a lot of areas. I think Squadrons did a really good job with like the flight mechanics. But when it came to that campaign, it was like 2 hours long and it wasn't that great. The only good part about it was Luke Skywalker after like The Last Jedi. That was the only like good, decent part about it. But the whole like Jedi Fallen Order thing, it brought back that magic. That little bit of magic. And my only gripe with that game is that I kind of wish that the character of Cal was, and this is just a big thing for me. I like that Skyrim kind of like, or Red Dead Redemption Online or whatever, where you can create your own character and you can look however you want to look and make your own Jedi. It's like your, it's your Jedi. It's your lightsaber. That's the kind of thing that I want to see in the Ubisoft open world game where you are you as like, however you want to create you. And then you can take that into an online world that you can share. I think it was Corey Balrog, the guy that did the God of War games.
Oh yeah.
Yo, you should do a Mandalorian game that's like multiple planets in a stellar, in like a solar system. You're fixing up your Razor Crest. You're going around collecting bounties. That's the whole game. And I'm like, that is what we want. Like we want, we just want to be in that universe. We want to live in that. And I think that's one of the reasons why Jedi Fallen Order was so great. And I know they've tried it. I know a lot of people like bring up Knights of the Old Republic a lot. I wasn't a big fan of the combat of that game. I like the Jedi Outcast kind of combat more. So that's what I'm hoping. It's just Red Dead Redemption, but you know, Jedi.
It's funny. I go back to Skyrim. I keep saying I want a Star Wars Skyrim, and I think you know what, I'd love your opinion on this because I've been saying it since a couple episodes into The Mandalorian. To me, The Mandalorian is a video game. That's what you're watching. He goes, he gets a mission, he goes, he has to fight the boss, he gets what he needs, and then they say, okay, here's the next key to your next mission. And that's a game already happening, right?
There's a meme that I've seen where it's like he's just doing all the side quests before he finishes the main quest. I'm like, that is literally what he's doing. Like, honestly, if they just did one-to-one, didn't change a thing with the episodes that we already have and just made it into a video game, everyone would be like, that's what we want. Thank you. That's what
I feel like that's why he doesn't take the helmet off, because he's probably always doing this. Oh, really?
Again? All right, yeah, sure, I'll help you out also. But yeah, like I hope that's what happens, man, because Jedi Fallen Order was such a little gem, and Respawn Entertainment is like one of those developers that I'm like, they get no respect. Titanfall 1 and 2, especially Titanfall 2's campaign, were really great. And I was like kind of nervous when they're like, oh yeah, we're doing a Star Wars thing. And I'm like, in like first person? Because I'm not a, I know that I play Call of Duty. I know that I play all these games. I'm not as big of a fan of like first person games as I am third person games. I like seeing your character. Maybe it's because like coming from somebody like that, like cinema so much, I like being able to see the character. I want to see them interact with the world, which was like a big problem when it came to Cyberpunk, when they made the decision to go first person. I'm like, why did you do this? So I'm hoping that like the new Star Wars Ubisoft title, like I just Skyrim, Red Dead, but I just hope it has that online component so I can basically play Star Wars with my friends as like a, oh, I'm a Jedi and you're a smuggler. Like that's what I want. Yeah. So cool, man.
I'm hopeful that I think we might be almost there, right? Because I mean, we are getting from a content perspective, you know, the television. I call it television because I'm 50, but the streaming service.
TV too. It's fine. Yeah, I don't care. Yeah, the streaming.
Gene Simmons from Kiss calls it Star Wars TV or Disney TV or something. So I think we're there. Like, I think it feels almost like there's somebody listening to what we want, and whether you can, and I'm not even going to go there with what did we get from the trilogy, right? So I have some issues. I have some things I love about it. But I think they're listening. I think and I don't think that they're catering, but I think they're like, oh, this is what's going to sell. Cause Disney does things because it's going to sell. They don't do things because, although, you know, huge credit needs to be given for not giving away Baby Yoda and missing an entire year of merchandise, right?
It's funny that you mentioned this. I have this argument with so many people all the time that they're like, Baby Yoda was like some type of character that was thought up in a think tank of like, what's a way that we can sell a bunch of toys? And I'm like, that's so unbelievably not true, because Disney is the type of company that, when they know they're doing something and they're like, we can market this, they're going to have that shit ready. And like, I have a Baby Yoda, but it took me almost a year to get it because I'm just like, it wasn't around. It just didn't exist. And I'm like, that's so brilliant. And it kind of tells you that, it informs you that it was not some manufactured thing. I think it was something that was thought of by the creatives. And I think that's honestly a big issue when it comes to Star Wars. And you could say this about a lot of other franchises as well. You have like the committee of people that are at the studio, or the people that are like, I'm involved with the marketing. I know that this is the next trend. And then you have the creatives that are like, I just want to make something cool. And yeah. So I feel like with The Mandalorian specifically, and now I'm hoping with these other shows, that it was kind of like Lucasfilm. And I know Bob Iger was very involved in like a lot of the sequel trilogy stuff of like, hey, this didn't work. So right. We got to do something that did work. And that's kind of why, you know, The Rise of Skywalker feels like it's two films. Mm-hmm. It feels like it's an overcorrection for The Last Jedi and continuing a story that no one really expected or a lot of people didn't want. So when it came to The Mandalorian, I feel like that was like a, hey, guys, we kind of messed up with the Last Jedi. We kind of split the fan base. A lot of people liked it. A lot of people didn't like it. But let's try The Mandalorian and give them exactly what they want from people that know Star Wars, not just like people that like it's a good director or a good writer or whatever. Let's just Dave Filoni's been making Star Wars for 10 years. All right, let's just give him $100 million. Let's go. He'll go make something cool in that cool, you know, wraparound screen place. Let's just go. And then it turns out to be the biggest thing because it's what people kind of wanted. And now I feel like now they realize that they're like, that's what people want. Like,
well, I think that's what's brilliant about Mandalorian is you have a visionary director, and I've said it sometimes and it feels a little like hyperbole, but I don't think it is. I think, you know, Favreau is probably one of the most creative, innovative directors right now, right? And whether it's, you know, he's got that George Lucas interest in technology, he's very keen on storytelling, but they paired him up with Filoni, who learned to tell stories from Lucas. So you're going to get a good Star Wars story. Whereas I think that's the challenge with the sequel trilogies. And I happen to be one of the people that's in the camp of, I loved Last Jedi, I love Force Awakens, Rise of Skywalker was my biggest problem with the three of them, right?
Yeah.
If I did, still loved it, still fun Star Wars movie, but it was missing something because I don't think it was told by the way I put it is I always say Rian Johnson was a fan of Star Wars and J.J. Abrams is a fan of Star Wars movies. And I think we got two different types of stories.
Great, right? That's a really interesting. It's funny that you say this, though, because like I've been one of those people when The Last Jedi was coming out. And I know that this is the big discourse of it's like this weird rift in Star Wars continuum. It's like, all right. Everything before The Last Jedi and everything after The Last Jedi is what the fan base kind of mostly cares about. And you got toxic people on both sides. And it's interesting because I was a huge, huge, huge Rian Johnson fan. Like a Looper, I love that movie. Brick, fantastic. I'm like, I love this creator. So when The Last Jedi came out, when it first dropped and we saw it in the theater, I came out of the theater being like, that's the best Star Wars movie ever made. It's incredible. It was so gorgeous and so cool. And then I let it sit and I didn't watch it again until like maybe a year later. And during that time of like, it's stewing in my brain of like, that didn't make sense. What? Why was this? They could have done that. And it's funny because like what he was trying to do with that was trying to get away from what everyone's critique was with the Force Awakens.
Sure.
Again, a correction for something that was a reaction. And I think that's kind of the problem that has been prevalent at Lucasfilm ever since Disney took over, is that a lot of it is correcting something that has been a reaction to something else, as opposed to picking a lane, trailblazing it and going, we're going in this direction, because that's exactly what we saw. And it's funny because now I watched The Last Jedi and I've got my gripes with it. Don't get me wrong. Like the whole Canto Bite thing, whatever. Yep. I've got my gripes with it.
Sure.
But I can still enjoy it. Like I can still go, no, it's a very well done movie. Mm-hmm. It's good. It's a good movie. It's a bad Star Wars sequel because it kind of threw out everything. And that was just kind of dumb creatively. But I also didn't like how JJ set it up and then it was taken over by somebody else. And then it went back to JJ to be like, hey, I'm going to fix everything, guys. Sorry.
Yeah.
And I'm like, it should have just been JJ's trilogy with the same writers. Yeah.
Yep.
And then give Rian his own trilogy, which I'm like, I don't know if that's still happening, but I don't know. I know I get a lot of flack for like kind of bouncing back and forth of like,
But I think that that's the reality of being a Star Wars fan. That's where social media makes me absolutely lose my mind, is the fact that, you know, I like I said, I'm a fan of The Last Jedi. I like what it did, but I'll be honest with you. It's probably like when I think about stories and the way a Star Wars film and story is put together, it is very different. I've said this before on the show. When I walked out of The Last Jedi, I said to my buddy, I said, this is both the best and worst Star Wars movie I ever saw, right? Yeah. Because it was like, wow, that was amazing. And what did I see? And then the problem, but I can't, if you say that on social media, like you said, like people are, luckily for me, I don't,
yeah,
you got 100,000 people who yell at you. I only have, you know, a couple thousand.
it gets different.
But it's like, you should be able, and that's, again, if we go back to sort of what's become sort of a theme of this conversation, is there's something about Star Wars, and it doesn't matter if you, you know, look, I can't get into the comic books. I want to, I really do, because apparently there's a great story thing, there, but that's not my thing, but that should be totally okay. And right, you and I, like, we have differing opinions on Last Jedi or Rise of Skywalker or whatever, and that's cool. But I think that just the vitriol that's coming with, and it's not just Star Wars, I mean, it's rooted in different political views,
sure, and absolutely, like, yeah, so there's like this whole discourse that's surrounded, and I know that it's exacerbated by, you know, Hollywood issues or political issues, and I get that. And so it's one of those things that, like, you can put in one camp or another camp, or if you say the wrong thing or you say the right, it's very weird. But it's funny, because, like, ultimately, like, even though I think that probably the Rise of Skywalker is probably the weakest of the Star Wars stuff, it's only the weakest because of, like, how it told its story and, like, the fetch quest thing and, like, the stuff that just came out of nowhere that was no set. There was no setup.
Right.
But they also, like, this is the thing that I will argue until I am dead, is that I will die on this hill, that I think that J.J. Abrams getting shit on, basically, by so many people, both people that were fans and not fans. Like, he got just railed, and it's unfair. Like, The Force Awakens was such a unique situation because it was being written by somebody, and then they got rid of that dude because they're like, we literally have to meet a quota. Like, we have to push this out in 2015. And originally it was summer 2015. And then they're like, okay, it's got to be November 2015 because Harrison Ford broke his leg. And like, whether or not there's the, you know, the conspiracy theory of, like, did he actually break his leg or they just wanted more time or whatever.
I haven't heard that one before.
Yeah, that's like, ooh, did it really happen? But, like, it's one of those things that, like, he was kind of given an impossible task where he had to both bring old fans, new fans, put them together and go, hey, this is, we don't know what we're doing. We're doing our best. And I think with The Force Awakens, even though I'm like, if they just pushed it a year, and I had a theory, I had a really interesting, I'm like, I still think that they should do this. But because Star Wars is now owned by Disney, I feel like with The Force Awakens, they should not have forced out The Force Awakens in 2015. What they should have done is released the original trilogy in how it originally came out, just like upscaled, upgraded, all that stuff. Just not, you know, special edition version. They should re-release that in theaters, recuperated their money, get interest back in Star Wars, and then drop The Force Awakens like 2 or 3 years after the fact, giving them more to actually work on the trilogy and, like, really make it interesting. But that's why, like, I don't give a lot of flack to The Force Awakens, because it was an impossible task. And I think that they still captured that magic, even though they didn't really expand upon anything. There's a lot of, like, conveniences. And those were all things that I'm like, you know, when she's like, that's a different question for another time. I'm like, what is that going to be answered?
And then that's the problem with JJ's stories to begin with. And I think JJ makes, like you were saying before, makes beautiful movies.
Yes. But
to your point, like, he leaves things out there and you're just like, wait a second. What? Are we going to get that again?
Are we going to get that? And we don't. And then that's the biggest missed opportunity of the sequel trilogy, is that it didn't build on itself. It did, you know, bury the past if you have to or whatever. Yeah. It did that, and then it did it again. And it's all course corrections of, like, what they think the audience wants, when in reality, just pick a lane, just do it, go. And that's kind of what we're seeing from The Mandalorian. I think that's one of the reasons why we love it.
Yeah, and I think that's why it's connecting so well. I think Filoni and Favreau have said, here's where we're going to go with it. And nothing felt forced in. I mean, even though there were things this year that were clearly, you know, rooted in fan service, Boba Fett, Bo-Katan, Ahsoka, but I believe that Favreau and Filoni said, you know, they had a whiteboard and they were like, okay, we'll bring this in and we'll do this and we'll do that. And it all connects.
That's right? My whiteboard where I put all the things of like, what's going to be my stuff. I'm like, and I'm going to get here eventually. And I think that's exactly what they did.
Yeah. They're playing the long game and it's working for them.
I'm hoping that's the trend that continues in Star Wars. Cause I just want it to be good. I don't care. I'm just going to just enjoy it. Except the Clone Wars.
Well, and I think it's also go watch the Clone Wars.
Fine,
you won't regret it. You won't regret it. Right, you know, you go watch it. You come back on in a couple of weeks. We'll talk about Clone Wars. Perfect, and but we'll start with your feelings on Matt Lantner as the voice of Anakin Skywalker, and we'll see if you're okay.
As a person, I like him a lot. It's just, you know, one of those things that, like, damn you. You handsome son of a bitch.
Well, we have this section on the show now where it's the 10 question segment. So if you're ready for it, I'm gonna bring that in here. So here. Fire.
Get ready.
Okay. For what?
So I won't judge you based on your answers, but I'm sure many other people will. So, you know, we'll be fine.
No.
So the first question for you is, what is your favorite Star Wars movie, TV show, or book?
It's the equivalent of asking, like, who's your favorite child?
Yeah, it's a tough one.
I mean, everyone's going to say Empire, and I know a lot of people say Empire. I love Empire. It's what got me into it. It's the thing that I revisit every single year. It doesn't matter if I'm watching the whole saga. I will watch Empire at some point because I'm like, that is one of the reasons why I became a director, is one of the reasons why I got into this industry, is because like that was so enamored by that. But I gotta give special accolades to Solo, even though I know it is not a perfect movie. I know that. I know it's not great. I know it's not perfect, but I love it so much. Space Western all the way. That's my answer.
So Solo is your favorite. That's a good, and it's funny because Solo is, I bounce back and forth sometimes when I think about films that are not part of the saga, so to speak. And sometimes it's Rogue One, sometimes it's Solo. But I can tell you both those movies, what works so well about those movies is either one of those. And look, I'll be honest, I don't watch Star Wars every single day. Like, you know, a lot of people think I probably do. but if Solo or Rogue One is on, I'm done. I'll watch it. I'll watch the whole thing. It'll stop my tracks. I'll watch the whole thing.
Of course, yeah. It's a good time.
Solo is great. So question number two is, if you could live on any Star Wars planet, anyone, which one would you call home?
I mean, we gotta say that Naboo is probably the prettiest, like, most Earth-like. We're just chilling on Naboo. It's, like, nice and pretty and stuff with, like, the weird, like, flea ticks that are, like, massive or whatever.
the ride on puffy weird things with legs that are too small to handle this.
I mean, the desert planets, Tatooine and Jakku are the worst. We couldn't say those.
Everybody wanna go back to Jakku.
I don't know. I would definitely say probably Naboo, just because it's, you know, prettiest, I think. And you know, life seems easy there. I want Start easy.
Right. That's a fair call. I don't think anybody can judge you on that one. So, all right. Would you consider yourself a rebel or an imperial?
Rebel. Like, no, it's not even, don't even skip a beat there. Come on now.
And come on. Next. We'll move on. That's fine. All right. So the next question is, what is your favorite Star Wars sound effect?
Okay. There's this specific sound that the TIE fighter makes that is like this roaring thing that like echoes throughout like everything. And there's like this great moment in The Force Awakens where like it's like that sound and it's coming down as they're like looking up. They're like, it's the TIE fighters coming after us. That sound, I don't know what it is about that, but it just, dang good.
That's a good call. All
right. Or Luke Skywalker's saber, but his saber, not his father's saber. The green one. It has a special special like little. It feels a little more fiery. I'd say those two. Yeah.
All right. That's cool. I love the TIE fighter. I remember I had a, you know, we were talking before about growing up and Star Wars being a thing with I had my best friend growing up, Andy Thompson. He could do a TIE fighter impression at age like 10 years old or whatever age we were. And I just remember sounding like a complete idiot trying to do it, but he could do it. And that was the thing. You just,
like me trying to be a Wookiee. It just doesn't work. I'm like, and I'm like, stop, stop.
You're gargling. Let's move stop on. That for you. All right. So the next question is, who's your favorite droid?
K2SO. I mean, I'm a big Alan Tudyk fan.
Yeah.
I had the chance to meet him when I was working at Machinima. And so I'm a little biased, but there's something about that droid I love so much. Just maybe it wasn't Imperial anymore. Maybe the fact that he seems to hate Jyn Erso so much. And it falls in line with how I felt about her character, because I'm like, your character is the void of character.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, that's great. It is a little arc with it. It's great. I love it. It's either second was probably BD-1 from Jedi Fallen Order.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. BD-1's adorable and try to kill Darth Vader. You can't be angry. I'm not angry at that.
It's funny. I love Alan Tudyk and I love everything he's done, but my favorite Alan Tudyk is the pirate guy from Dodgeball.
Arg. I always forget that he's in A Knight's Tale as well. Like the angriest, fieriest redhead in the world, and I'm like, I love that man. He's awesome. I gotta watch Dodgeball now.
Huh. Oh man, that's great. That's what I, that and Rogue One and Solo kill an evening for me if I'm not careful. That's great. So if you could own any spaceship or vehicle in the Star Wars universe, what would you own?
Got to be the Millennium Falcon. There's no question. There's like it's like the Millennium Falcon's like up here, and then like way down here it's like maybe the Razor Crest. I don't know. I don't like the design of the Razor Crest at all. I think it's very like, you know, as they say, it was like prequel era.
Yeah.
I don't like that design of that ship, but I just like the ship. Oh, the Falcon, of course. Like, you just like, come on. Like, I going to Galaxy's Edge, I just don't even want to ride the ride. I just want to sit in the cockpit and chill. Like, that's what I want to do. That's the
ride starts up and you're like,
I'm not ready.
I'm good.
I know it's a hamburger and an olive, but I don't care. I love that ship so much. I don't like what they did to it in Solo though, when it made that like weird needle nose point. That was dumb. But whatever, I'm not gonna get into it.
So when people say the Falcon, I always ask, do you like the Lando or the Han one? But clearly, you've answered that question. So I like my
Falcon dirty and disgusting with the red paneling and the square dish that was replaced. That's what I like.
That's great. All right. Cool. So the next question number 7 is, what is of all the Star Wars, you got to have some cool Star Wars collectibles. Even what's your favorite one that you own? And it doesn't have to be a toy or anything. It just, you know,
Okay. So I was like really, really obsessed with Obi-Wan Kenobi's lightsaber, not his older lightsaber, but the one that he had in the Phantom Menace. That was the first lightsaber that I ever owned as a kid, where it was like, you know, the crappy sword and everything. And I had that. And then I recently just got it at the Disney parks. And that was like a great little moment of just like getting that thing and shing. And I'm like, oh, I love it so much. What I want to do is I want to like do a CNC like milling of it or whatever, where like an actual, like just a piece of aluminum just to chill on my desk. That's what I want. But yeah, man, that I gotta say, that is great. I don't know where it is.
You know, it's around funny that, when I remember, again, as a jaded Star Wars fan, seeing Phantom Menace, I remember seeing those lightsabers the first time. I was like, what's going on there? And now I there's a guy named Ken Napzok, and he always talks about being a reformed prequelist, and I say the same exact thing. And now when I see it's funny you say that, because that's what I've been jonesing for my next stupid thing to spend money on is the Obi-Wan Kenobi lightsaber from Phantom Menace, that weird sort
I know you must have seen this, where he's picking his lightsaber.
Yeah.
Have you? Yeah, that little video of like, he's like almost gonna pick Qui-Gon's, and I'm like, no, that's not you. That's not you. It's gotta be. And it's funny because I'm like, there's no way like this is getting deep, but like, okay, if you just look at the original Obi-Wan Kenobi lightsaber that then Luke modeled his off of or whatever, his lightsaber has like a little, like the circular end that's got like the little like knobs that come out or whatever.
Yep. And it looks then like it falls apart at the end because it's a very thin connector, right?
Yeah. And so you look at that and you look at the, so you compare the old Obi-Wan Kenobi lightsaber with the Phantom Menace one, they both have the same kind of knobs at the end. And I'm like, and so for him to pick it and it not be like, oh, he's going to pick the other, like the Mace Windu one or whatever. And like for him to pick that one, I'm like, well, duh, because it's supposed to look like it's duh. And so, yeah, it's I love that one. I don't love the Rey saber. I don't know what they decided to do with that, but that's a whole other conversation. Really? It's funny because like, dude, all right, so this is a complete sidebar, completely ruining the 10 question thing.
No, hey, but that's what the 10 questions is all about.
but the whole can we just talk about the missed opportunity with Rey's lightsaber? Okay. Sure. Not just, I know everyone's like, oh, the lightsaber should have been a pike, it should have been double bladed. I don't care about that. That should have, whatever. Sure. Right. What I'm annoyed with is the fact that it's established at the beginning of Rise of Skywalker that she's working on her lightsaber. And in the previous film, in The Last Jedi, on purpose, they destroyed Anakin's lightsaber. Yep. They destroyed it on purpose. And then I don't know why. They're like, let's mend it, as opposed to her showing that she's come full circle as a Jedi, just like Luke did by making her own lightsaber. And then in the trailers, we see her using her awesome yellow lightsaber going at like and then they could have, like, for the 6 months leading up to the movie, been selling that lightsaber to like little girls that like want to be like her. What a missed opportunity. You can't even buy that lightsaber anywhere.
Like, right. Oh. Well, that's what's shocking to me too. Right. Like right now you can't even find that. And I agree. It's we could do an hour on missed opportunities in Rise of Skywalker, because I think that's absolutely one of them. I mean, you had that scene, she was training. Why not have, instead of her floating and just have her, they cut the scene from Return of the Jedi where Luke makes his lightsaber. Yes. Give it to us from Rey. Right.
Have that moment be her putting it together, and like then we're like, as the audience, as like just from a storytelling point of view, because the biggest gripe with Rey's character is like we never see her actually train. We're just she screws up a rock or whatever. Like we don't see her do anything to train. So to have that whole little training montage, which was obviously a course correction for everybody's, like, you know, what they thought of the other movies,
right?
Have her have that moment that we didn't get with Luke from the deleted scene. She puts the whole thing together, and now as the audience, we're like, oh, just like Vader informed the audience in Return of the Jedi that by Luke creating his lightsaber, his training is now complete. Mm-hmm. Have her do that same thing, and it's like, oh, whatever.
Yep, missed opportunity.
I'm upset. That.
So Obi-Wan's lightsaber. We'll go with that. Excellent. That's a good call. All right, so the eighth question. If you could be any character in Star Wars, who would it be and why?
All right, I'm going to go with a fairly Poe Dameron. Ooh. I got to say Poe. And one of the reasons why I mean, obviously the whole Poe Dameron character is supposed to be the Han Solo character or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I love this mixture that he has of being like semi-smuggler man and also X-Wing dude. Because my whole thing, like, if I get the choice, if I had the chance, and I'm kind of bummed that Patty Jenkins is already doing an X-Wing Squadrons movie, because that was my goal. That was my dream, that I'm like, I don't care what happens in my life, what happens in my career. I just want to be in like a Rogue Squadron movie. That is what I want. It doesn't matter what character, what part, the tiniest thing. I don't care. That's what I want. And so they're already doing it. I'm like, no, it's happening too quickly.
They haven't happened yet, dude. You can get in still.
I don't know. I think Poe Dameron has that like perfect, like he's an X-Wing pilot who's also like former spice runner, that kind of thing. And I wish that they had embellished on his character a little bit more, but I just like knowing behind the scenes of like that they killed him off in when they filmed everything on Jakku. They killed him. Yeah. He was dead. And then halfway through filming, JJ's like, I got a way to bring you back, and I'm just going to bring you back and not talk about it. And I love that. I don't know. It's just like this. I'd say that. I like his character a lot.
It's funny. I never thought about it, but the irony of him having the line of somehow Palpatine returned is sort of somehow Poe returned, right?
Poe survived that crash, left his jacket. We're not going to talk about it.
Well, you know, it's hot on Jakku. He probably blew out of the ship, and he was like, I'm going to leave the coat behind. I'm
going to wear it. Okay. Whatever.
Yeah. All right. Okay. So question number, and you know, it's funny, 98 episodes, nobody has said Poe. So I think you're, I don't know what you win. Maybe I'll send you a sticker or something.
I knew it was different.
Well, I know you had probably watched all 97 episodes in preparation for our conversation.
That's exactly what it was. Yeah.
You were very busy. So what's your favorite Star Wars moment?
Oh gosh. Okay. All right. I know this is gonna be a divisive thing to say. But I know it's divisive in the sense of like everything that's surrounding it, and there are arguably better Star Wars moments. I'd say, you know, number one, obviously, I'll do three. My number third is obviously the Luke and Vader confrontation at the very end, where, you know, just that moment of like that moment is like the greatest Star Wars moment ever. I know that. Mm-hmm. And it's still like that deep. Like, I love that. Number two, it's this moment in Solo where it's like the big monster that's like trying to murder everyone they're going light speed or whatever. I think he says something like light speed, baby. And they're like, fuck it. He punches it and they go. And I'm like, that's Solo. That's my boy.
Right.
Like, I love that moment. That just like had me. But there's this moment in The Force Awakens of all of the movies. There's this moment in Force Awakens where Kylo is like reaching for the saber in the snow. And then Rey is reaching for the saber. She gets it. Now, we could argue the whole like, would she beat Kylo like in the Force pull thing because she doesn't know how to use the Force? We could argue that. I don't care about that. What I care about is that moment of like she grabs it and it chooses her. And the music hits right there in that moment. Like, it doesn't matter what I feel about the rest of the film or the sequel trilogy or anything. That moment is just bliss. It's perfection. And I get chills every single time. And it could be John Williams. It could just be the look on her face and then to like, so good. I love that.
No, that's, and I, you know, that's one of those moments you remember in the theater. And actually I just tweeted about it today about how we were sort of misdirected to believe it was Finn just so JJ could have that moment. Right. That was the moment he wanted.
I've got my whole opinion about Finn, and I feel like they really did not do a great job with his character. And it's kind of weird because I know that it was like originally set up to be like, okay, he's a child soldier. Mm-hmm. He was taken from his home to be a stormtrooper. Obviously, you end that arc with him helping defect stormtroopers, and they don't do that. And I think that's a huge missed opportunity. And I also think it's a missed opportunity not to have him using the lightsaber in like a stormtrooper outfit, but whatever.
That would be so
cool. But whatever,
that's the image I needed. It's funny. I said today as well that the best Finn Jedi moment we got was in the Lego Holiday Special, and that's unfortunate. So, I mean, I love the Lego Holiday Special, but it's the.
I mean that moment with Finn where he's like, this is why The Force Awakens gets a pass for me, because it does have those moments that magic, and Finn. When he knows for a fact he's probably going to die. He knows he's picking up this lightsaber. He's used it one other time before.
Right.
And you've got this hulking, scary dude with the big nose and the perfect hair just coming right at you. And he's just like, I'm going to go after you, dude. And it's like that moment that I'm like, he knows he's dead. He knows that he has no chance. And he does it anyway. I'm like, that's a hero. And that is why the character Finn is so great. And
I'm sorry, I've stirred such emotion.
This is why I'm like, you know, Lucasfilm was like, whoa, dude, chill, bro. We're not gonna hire you, chill, dude, bro.
We can't put you in a movie because you're gonna have too many.
I'm gonna be like, yo, Kathleen. So this is what would really happen. The story group comes up, Steven, shut up. Just be quiet.
Pablo Hidalgo will be like, listen, dude.
He's like, listen, I'm going to tweet about you and it's going to block everyone. Shut up. I'm like, okay, sorry.
I have a t-shirt that I made. It says blocked by Pablo. And it's and I made it right after the big block of 2019 or whatever.
How hard it's got to be so hard to be somebody that's involved in Star Wars in any creative capacity. Like, regardless of how people handle it or whatever, like, it's got to be so hard. Like,
nobody's going to be happy. Nobody's ever going to be happy.
Never going to be happy. And like, yeah. You know, I mean, yeah, it's yeah, one day, but maybe if they're not like Steve, shut up.
We'll get you there. We'll see what we do for you. Yeah. All right. So the last question is, what is your go-to Star Wars quote or your favorite quote, or which I call it go-to because I think a lot of us have that thing that we always say.
There's this moment. Okay. Yeah. The part in New Hope where he's like, everything's fine here now. How are you? I say that all the time. I don't know why I do. I know it's an ad-libbed moment or whatever, but yeah. I love that moment. It's great. Yeah, I say that, you know, everything's fine down here now. Yeah, it's great. I love that moment. That's it. Nothing special. I just love it. It's freaking hilarious.
No, that's perfect. That's great. Well, Steven, I could probably keep you another hour or two, but yeah. I'm not going to because I know okay. you have a sentence to make and you have big things to do. You have to audition for another Star Wars role.
Yeah, and not good.
I wasn't going to say that, Steven. I was going to be much more optimistic. I mean, but what are you, 0 for 2 now? I mean,
no big deal. NBD. It's fine. I don't care.
You know what? They're waiting for the perfect role for you. They're like,
yeah, I'm going to be like Greg Grunberg, where I just like show up out of nowhere. And then I'm like, then I'm gone in the second movie, but then I come back in the third movie and everyone's
because you're friends with JJ. That's why. That's how that works.
That's my goal now is I just got to be friends with Pablo or like some random person over there. Just be like, hey, buddy. And he's like, all right, I'll take pity on you. I'll give you more lines than one of the main characters from The Last Jedi, NBD. So yeah, it's
funny.
I'm getting in trouble. Okay. No,
and this is live, so I can't edit it. You're screwed. I'm sorry. You had your chance.
Done. Love you. I love you, LF. I love you.
Steve, where can people find you on social media and YouTube, and where can they keep up with your hot takes and whatnot?
I'm at Steven Sean Ford, but most importantly, go to our YouTube channel. It is YouTube. Yeah. .com/ascender, one word. It's we make stuff and we need more views because we're, you know, why not? Jen will even agree. Yeah, but that's it. That's I'm gonna find my YouTube channel and
that's awesome. Yep, go to Ascender, check that out. And Steve, thank you so much, man. I hope to have you on again sometime. Absolutely. This was fun. I love just geeking out with people who are as passionate about this stuff and also can have a different opinion and not like freak out and hang up.
I'm a little crazy. But yes, absolutely. This has been a blast. Thank you so much.
Awesome, dude. Thank you. I'll talk to you again soon.
Sounds good.
Well, that wraps it up for this episode of Around the Galaxy. Thanks to our guests and thank you for hanging out. If you had fun, please like, subscribe, and share. If you really liked it, please feel free to head on over to our Patreon page at patreon.com/beyondtheblastdoors. You can also find that link on beyondtheblastdoors.com where you can keep up with this show and all the shows on the Beyond the Blast Doors network, as well as find a link to our merch store. And if you use the code ATGCAST, you'll get 10% off your order. So until next time, this has been Pete Fletzer, and we'll see you for our next trip Around the Galaxy.
Around the Galaxy is copyright 2021 Pete and Seat Studios. Our music is brought to us by the band Silver Colored Knob, whose music can be found on Apple iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you find music.